Did you know that every day companies you've probably never heard of are making billions off your personal data? Your name, your address, phone number, even details about your family are pulled from public records and the internet and then sold without your consent. There's an entire marketplace making money off your privacy, and most people have no idea it exists. And that's when Aura comes in. Right now, you can try Aura free for 14 days when you visit aura.com/remove. That's enough time for Aura to start removing your personal information from data broker sites. Sign up today at aura.com/remove and get peace of mind that your privacy, identity, and finances are safeguarded. That's aura.com/remove. Certain terms apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Detroit. This is the 2026 Detroit Auto Show, International Auto Show, right?
I don't know if they actually call it international anymore, because it's pretty
Detroit-centric, right?
Pretty much, yeah.
Which is a good thing.
None of the European automakers are here. Most of the Japanese and Asians aren't, aren't here.
This is really almost like true Michigan show.
It's about as true. It's about as Michigan as it gets, yeah.
So thanks for joining us on this episode of TFL Talking Trucks podcast. With me on this episode is my friend Sam Abolsamed. You have your own podcast. You have your own, I mean, you do many things in the automotive industry.
My own little empire.
A little empire. And you've been in the industry for about four decades, right?
Yeah. Last year was my 40th year since I started as an engineering co-op student working in the auto industry.
There you go. So you understand this industry quite well. So what I want to do, this is our Best of Detroit. Mm-hmm. So we want to walk around and I can actually kind of show what's here and maybe get some insight, especially from you, about what, you know, state of the industry a little bit, what trucks and big SUVs are here. So we're starting here in the Ram booth at Stellantis because they actually have a lot going on today.
Yeah, they do. And right here, we've got the Ram 1500 Rev, which eventually might even go on sale.
Yes.
That's the last, most recent I've heard, second half of this year.
Yeah.
But this is the range extended electric Ram.
So we can show the badge actually.
Yeah.
So actually this looks almost like a production model, right?
Yeah.
It's
I actually saw one on the road driving here this morning. And apparently there's about 200 of these now that are out being driven around by Stellantis employees.
Yeah, so I have a little bit of inside information because about an hour ago I spoke with Tim Kuniskis, the CEO of Ram, and I asked him on the due date on the Rev, and he said kind of TBD. So he said that they had a lot going on. You know, they're launching the TRX and several other things. And so stay tuned.
Yeah, I mean, they still have vehicles that don't have Hellcats and Hemis in them yet that they have to
Have to deliver, right?
Yeah.
So, but this is quite interesting. This truck, let's look inside of this truck because I've seen some prototypes before, but this seems to be almost finished. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, the thing you got to keep in mind is that, you know, this is the cab is basically standard Ram 1500. So unlike a lot of the prototypes that we see where, you know, you'll see surfaces that don't have all the proper graining on them and everything, you know, this is stock 1500. It's like any other 1500. It's what's underneath that makes the difference.
Exactly, and what's underneath is electric motors, one in the front, one in the rear, so it's all-wheel drive, four-wheel drive, and we have a Pentastar under the hood.
Yeah. Yeah,
so which is a generator, right?
Yeah, so you got about 650 horsepower from the two motors that are driving the vehicle.
Yeah,
you got a 92 kilowatt hour battery pack, and a 27 gallon fuel tank that is fueling the Pentastar V6 that is not connected to the wheels in any way. All it's doing is driving a generator that, as your battery depletes, that generator is producing electricity to keep the battery charged, so that when you're towing, you can. Unlike with a Lightning or other electric trucks.
Even Silverado EV, right?
You can just keep on going.
Yeah, exactly. And also, the capability of the towing rating on this is 14,000 pounds.
Yeah.
And it's got heavy-duty hubs.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look at the hubs on this thing, it's 8 lugs.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so this should be quite interesting. But right now, for Ram, it's a lot about internal combustion, right?
Yeah.
So let's walk over a little bit further because we don't have pricing on this yet, right? Although Ram actually told me that the Rev range extender will be cheaper than all electric.
Yeah. You know, so you got the plug right here.
And it's not it's a CCS. Max.
Yeah, it's still CCS. But you know, who knows? I mean, if they keep delaying this, by the time they actually build it, it might get an NACS port.
Exactly.
But
do you agree with that?
Yeah.
That the range extender could be more affordable than an all-electric truck?
Yeah, because when you look at the cost of the battery, you know, what they originally announced with the BEV version of this, the standard BEV version was going to be 160 kilowatt-hour battery.
Yeah.
And this is 92, so if you're taking out about 70 kilowatt-hours of battery.
Almost halving it.
You're taking out somewhere between $9,000 and $10,000 of cost just from that battery. And then to add the range extender back in and the fuel system and the exhaust and everything, it's probably somewhere in the neighborhood of $4,000 to $5,000. So theoretically,
you're still cutting cost.
At least cost, I don't know how they're gonna price it, but at least from a cost perspective, it's probably gonna be about $4,000 to $5,000 cheaper for Stellantis to build that than for the standard range BEV that they were gonna do.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Now we're standing next to a truck that's the opposite of
yes.
The one we just looked at.
Yeah.
This is a 5.7 liter Hemi that's supercharged with a Whipple.
Mm-hmm.
It's about 650, because this is called the 650,
right?
Which is basically identical horsepower level as that electric range extender.
Right, but I think it'll be interesting, you know, when you guys get a chance to hopefully drag race these back to back.
Because this one is probably lighter in weight.
It's probably lighter,
yes.
But I'll bet you that one might still be quicker.
Because of all that electric torque, right?
That instant electric torque and all-wheel drive. And is this all-wheel drive or
it should be,
or rear-wheel drive?
I mean, I hope it's all-wheel drive too, because even if it's
all-wheel drive, the power delivery is not going to be the same as what you're going to get out of the electric motor. So, I want to see you guys take these two to the airstrip.
Yeah, but what do you think about this e-torque, this supercharged Ram 1500 here? By the way, it's coming, you know, with the direct connection.
Right.
It
so you
has
order
e-torque.
That for a dealer.
Yes.
Yeah, and so the 5.7 Hemi has the e-torque on there as standard, and I think to simplify the installation, keep things as, you know, to minimize the complexity, it's easier to leave that on there, because otherwise if you take that off, you're going to have to put on an alternator and set up the electrical system for
slightly
that
different
for an alternator. Yeah, so this is taking the place of the alternator on a traditional engine.
Yeah, and there's a small battery
in
the system as well.
Yeah.
Not humongous one.
Yeah, it's about a half kilowatt hour.
Yeah, very, very tiny
by
comparison. But it's interesting because this looks like complexity, but it's a little bit counterintuitive that this would be easier to do.
It actually simplifies, because that also takes the place of your starter motor.
Yes.
So there's no traditional starter motor, no alternator. You just have that one unit.
Bam. And it's driven by the serpentine belt. So,
yes.
So it's right there. Okay, let's keep moving. Now, there's also the TRX. We've done many stories already about the TRX. It's coming back, and they're saying kind of middle of this year.
Yeah.
Like summertime. And are you excited by this? What do you think?
You know, yes and no.
Okay.
You know, I always love hearing the sound of a Hellcat, of a supercharged V8. But you know, the reality is driving it, having driven the RHO and the first generation TRX, you know, the RHO was just as much fun to drive. Yeah, it didn't have quite the sound, maybe not quite as quick ultimately, but you know, I'm sure there will absolutely be an audience for this truck. There will be people that want the most that they can possibly get out of it, and the 777 horsepower now.
Triple sevens.
Yeah.
I keep thinking about Las Vegas for some reason. You know, pulling that handle and seeing triple
sevens. I'm sure it's just a complete coincidence that they tuned it to exactly 777 horsepower.
It couldn't be 776, right?
No. Or 778. Yeah.
Triple
seven. That would
seven.
Just not work. Yeah.
Okay. No. So I was actually at my local dealer near Denver, Colorado, and the orders for these are not open yet.
Right.
2027s. This is a 2027 model. But my dealer said they have a spreadsheet of 30 people waiting for this new TRX.
Sure.
Already.
And you know, it's cheaper than the
Raptor R.
It's cheaper than the Raptor R.
Yeah.
And it's also cheaper than the final edition of the old TRX was.
Which is a little sad.
Yeah, although it is significantly more expensive than the TRX was when it launched, which is the one you guys owned.
Because it started in 2021 model year at $72,000, and the one we purchased had a couple of options, several things, at $77,000. this is $102,000.
Right, including the $2,595 destination charge now.
Which is a humongous charge. Yeah. And you and I, on our podcast, we talk about this because it's $2,600 almost.
Yeah.
It's pretty crazy. All right, let's keep moving. I noticed a really cool Gladiator. Can we go see it?
Yeah, let's go see the Gladiator.
So Ram, Stellantis has a big presence at this show this year. I mean, their booth is pretty tremendous, and they have Camp Jeep area as well.
Back Camp Jeep, so that people can, when the consumers come in, they can go try out the Jeeps on, you know, even if they never actually, if they buy a Jeep and never take it off-road, they can still kind of get a little bit of that experience right here on the show floor.
Yeah. And we're walking by several vehicles, so if you want to learn more about the Recon or maybe the Cherokee, come back to our car podcast, right?
Yeah.
We're focused on pickup trucks in this particular area. Dude, what do you think about the look of this? I love
this
military look.
Yeah, I like this look. I like nice clean, kind of not, a little more subtle, but the matching wheels and the olive drab paint on the bodywork, I think it looks really neat.
It reminds of the original Willys, you know, Jeeps. Let's look at the front a little bit. But I want to bring up a point, since we're looking at this Gladiator and talking about Jeep, is that recently, basically it was confirmed that their plug-in hybrid 4xe technology, not the entire 4xe nameplate, right?
Right, 4xe is applying to everything that they build with a plug.
Yes, but plug-in technology is going away, at least for now.
Yeah, so the plug-in hybrids that they have on the Wrangler, the Grand Cherokee, and that they were planning for the Gladiator as well as the Pacifica plug-in hybrid, all those are being discontinued.
Have you heard about the Hornet at all?
I haven't heard anything on the Hornet. I'll have to ask.
Because it has a plug-in version of it as well.
Yeah, but that's a completely different system that they have on there.
Okay.
But these all four of these vehicles, or you know, three of them that were actually in production, Stellantis has had a lot of issues with recalls on those. They've had some problems with fires on them, and so they've gone through a long string of recalls.
That's so unfortunate,
I think, you know, given that they, you know, with the rollback and emission standards, they don't need to have these in the lineup anymore now, and the problems they've had with it, trying to get those sorted out, they decided it's better to just cut their losses on that.
Do you think it'll come back in a short order, like 1 or 2 years down the line? Do you think it might return?
I think it's more likely, it's probably more like 3 to 4 years. Probably be a next generation system, maybe based on some new battery technology, some different suppliers. But at some point, I think they'll probably bring it back.
So it's not as quick as some people might think, right?
Yeah, and what we might actually see is, depending on the success of that Ram Rev and the Grand Wagoneer, our EREV over here.
Let's take a look at this.
Yeah. We might actually see them go the EREV route with these instead of the traditional plug-in hybrid.
That might be actually very interesting,
so you could
do
an EREV Wrangler or Grand Cherokee.
Or Gladiator, for example.
Yeah, and instead of the Pentastar, maybe put the four-cylinder in there, the two-liter four-cylinder.
So let's just show this Grand Wagoneer. This is basically the cousin to that Ram Rev that we were looking at, right?
Also with a plug. Still a CCS, but...
Okay.
Yeah, it's the same powertrain that's in that Ram Rev, but with a smaller fuel tank, because this has a shorter wheelbase, so it's only a 20-gallon fuel tank.
Versus 27
in the Ram. There.
But it's got a fresh face, right?
Yeah.
They just redid the face on the Grand Wagoneer.
And look at this. Look what it says.
Has a Jeep badge?
Yeah.
What?
You don't have to go looking inside the headlamp cluster for the little tiny Jeep.
So what we're referring to is when the Grand Wagoneer and Wagoneer launched, it was like a sub-brand, right, for Jeep, and it had no Jeep badges whatsoever, and it didn't make sense to a lot of us.
Yeah, so it just had a big Wagoneer across the front and across the tailgate. And
but I think now it's proper, right?
Yeah.
It's part of, you buy them at the same dealership, right?
Yeah.
You're not going to a Wagoneer dealership.
Right, exactly.
I
like this new front-end look on here, the new lighting and everything.
Yeah,
I think it
wasn't a complete redesign, obviously, because the vehicle is mostly the same. They just changed the headlamps and kind of the face of it, right?
Yeah, and they took a lot from the design of the Wagoneer S, the EV, and added this light strip in here. And I think it's a good look. It makes it look a little sleeker.
Yeah. So the Gladiator soldiers on. Do you know anything? Can you share anything? Because the Gladiator is getting long in the tooth. I mean, it came out as a 2020 model. Have you heard anything about like redesigning it or anything like that?
Yeah, I think 2028 time frame is when 27 or probably late 27 or early 28 is when we'll see a next generation. And I think this is going to share platform with the Ram midsize truck, the Dakota. So recently they had an event and Tim confirmed that the midsize Ram truck is going to be called Dakota. And
that's a Toledo.
That's
going to
be built in Toledo, yeah.
Which is where these are built, right?
Yep. And so,
and the Wrangler too.
So we'll probably see them share an architecture, all based off a variation of the Stella frame architecture. So we'll probably see an update of both this and the Wrangler around the similar time frame.
That would be exciting because I heard a lot of rumors and a lot of forums talking about that this was a one generation vehicle that was going to go away, you know, one and done type of thing. But I was hoping it wouldn't be true.
Yeah, we'll
see. And it seems like it's not quite.
Plans are changing all the time. So it's entirely possible that they might decide not to continue with this. They might decide that the Dakota is a better way to go for a midsize. Or they might keep this around.
I'm hoping they keep this. And by the way,
if they're using the same platform,
why not?
It's relatively, and you've got a lot of the same sheet metal from the Wrangler. You know, it wouldn't be that crazy expensive to do both.
I hope they go that way. Yeah. Speaking of changes, I mean, we see a lot of quick changes.
Yeah.
In the industry these days, right?
Constantly, yeah.
I mean, you've been around, like you said, you know, in the industry for 40 years plus. It used to take a lot longer, isn't it, to just make adjustments, or is it true?
Well, it was as much that, you know, we had change, you know, I think the time it takes to develop a new vehicle, you know, it's gotten a little bit faster, but it's still, you know, 3 to 4 years to develop a new vehicle from scratch. But what has been changing a lot is the product plans. So they'll start down the path of developing something and decide, nope, that's the wrong direction. We need to drop this and do something different. And so that's something that we haven't really seen so much of before.
Yeah, just kind of readjustment of the timelines, I guess.
Yeah, adjusting timelines and adjusting what plans. Products they're doing, you know, based on market conditions. You know, when you got changing regulations, changing consumer demand, they have to adapt to that.
So we just walked into the Ford space. Ford obviously also has a gigantic presence at the show, a very large booth. We kind of walked by past a couple of Broncos, and I did it on purpose because it's a whole different kind of show.
Yeah.
But in the truck space, there's still, actually they dropped a couple of hints. Were you at the event last night?
No, at the off-road event? That one, but I was at a backgrounder on Monday.
So check this out, because one of the Ford executives was up there yesterday, and I was there. He said, oh, by the way, the Ranger Tremor will be returning.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a nugget that I kind of caught in that presentation. And also a special Carhartt version of the Super Duty was going to come. And they teased it with a wheel.
Okay.
You know, they showed a wheel
that
kind of looked like, they said it was inspired by a Detroit manhole cover that you see on the street.
Yeah, they've got some really interesting manhole covers in this town, you know, especially cast with some intricate designs on them. And so it would make sense to have a badge that takes inspiration from that.
Yeah, so obviously they haven't updated their Super Duty in a while. I mean, 2023 was kind of the year where they kind of changed the face of it, the front end. They did some engine updates.
Yeah, they did a lot of upgrades for 23.
Yeah.
And, you know, they considered it a generational upgrade. And there was some pretty substantial changes done at that time.
So there are also a lot of rumors. You know, we live in a day and age where you see a lot of, like, AI-based imagery or video. And somebody told me
that. You guys would never create anything like that.
No, but I want to differentiate what I'm doing is because I'm not saying a Caterpillar pickup truck is going to be here tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what I'm doing. I've done something before where I have an idea in my head, like a lower TRX, and I use AI just to create that image.
Yeah.
But we're very clear, this is my rendering.
Yeah.
This is my thoughts, not, oh, look, it's coming tomorrow.
Yeah.
That type of thing.
If you look at my YouTube feed, you know, you'll see all kinds of nonsense popping up on there.
And the reason why I mention this is because somebody said, at Detroit in 2026, we're going to see an 8-liter power stroke diesel that's coming tomorrow.
Yeah.
Well, there's no engine news here.
No.
So, and also somebody said there's going to be a new Duramax V8, 8.3 liter. That's also not here.
Yeah.
We'll show the GM in a second. So Ford has the entire lineup here. Their Ranger Raptor is here, which we actually used to own a TFL mm-hmm. truck.
Yeah, that's still my favorite of the off-road midsize trucks.
Above all of them?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would agree with you.
The others.
It's just, it seems like the right size, the right power.
It's a nice balance. You know,
yeah.
It's like, you know, the ATV, the Canyon AT4X AEV edition, you know, is awesome. But, you know, it's also really high up.
You have
very,
to like
very heavy.
Jump into
it's,
it.
It's funny. When I had one last summer, I was looking at the payload sticker, and it had a payload of 850 pounds. My next door neighbors have a 2022 Maverick hybrid, just the base, the one they used to sell for 20 grand, which has a 1,500 pound payload capacity.
Almost twice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's really interesting. And these Rangers actually have decent payload.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, if we check this one, I'll bet you it'll be around 1,400 probably.
Probably, yeah.
Which is actually, you know, I'm a big dude, 1340.
Okay.
So we're not far off.
That's still respectable.
Yeah, we're not far off because, you know, I'm not going to say exactly how much I weigh, but if you put four of me.
If you put four adult men into a Canyon, you know, I mean, in this thing, you're still going to have several hundred pounds left.
A little bit left.
In that Canyon,
you're
going to
be near the top.
You have nothing.
Yes.
Can't take anything else with you.
Speaking of Mavericks,
yeah.
There's a couple of Mavericks here. Can you tell me a little bit about NACTOY?
What happened
there?
So in the North American Car, Truck, and Utility of the Year, the Truck of the Year was won by the Maverick Lobo, the street truck.
One. Yeah, this one. Okay.
This was the winner.
Oh, there it is. It even has a plaque on it.
Of course.
Yes.
They have all that stuff prepared in advance, you know, just in case they win.
Okay. So that was announced today. So
that was announced, about 3 hours ago.
Fresh off the presses,
yep.
So to speak. So Lobo is a new trim level, really.
Yeah.
But it's also kind of a signal, at least in my mind, and I want to see if you agree, that kind of the street, slightly lowered truck are making a resurgence.
I mean, with trucks being so popular, manufacturers are looking for any way to potentially expand the market. And so, the regular, standard Mavericks and Rangers and so on, already very popular. But, you know, what other niches can they find, you know, based on the existing platforms they've got? And so this, based on the Maverick, there's already the F-150 Lobo. I would be surprised if we don't see a Ranger Lobo at some point.
Oh, it's over here. Let's take a look.
You know, for the F-150 Lobo, they didn't lower it as much as they did with the Maverick.
Yeah, that's my kind of a comment. So they made it level. So if you take a wide view, sorry about that. If you take a wide view, they lowered it in the back about 2 inches.
Right.
So it looks level, which I like.
Yeah.
But there's still space. There's still a lot of space between the wheel and the fender.
Yeah.
Right? So I kind of wanted it to look much lower.
Yeah, and I wouldn't be surprised if they do that at some point, you know,
if
they think that there's a market for it, they will certainly build it.
And you mentioned something else, like you mentioned possibility of a Ranger Lobo.
I wouldn't rule out that possibility.
Ford hasn't said anything about this.
No, they've not said anything. But if these two sell well,
yeah,
it would make sense for them to do a Ranger.
And they're
doing Tremors across the board.
Exactly.
So, you know, Lobos across the lineup as well would make sense.
That makes sense. Because they announced the Tremor Ranger coming back.
Yeah.
So that's really interesting. Well, there's a Lightning there.
Yeah.
But it's been discontinued.
Yeah. But they still have a bunch left to sell, so.
Okay.
And since this is, you know, mainly a consumer show, you know, people from around Southeast Michigan, Northwestern Ohio are going to be coming here over the next week and a half to check out the new vehicles as they get ready to buy.
Yeah.
This is something that they want to sell off.
So Ford says in a couple of years the Lightning will return.
Yep.
Right. But as a range extender.
Right.
Very similar to the Ram.
Yes.
Right?
So instead of a frunk here, you will have some kind of engine and a generator.
Which is kind of a shame because I like this covered weather protected space. that's in the front.
Yeah, you know, it's just, you know, I think Ford did a lot right with this truck when they built it. They got it to market quickly.
It's rides really nice.
Yeah, it's a great truck. The only thing that it's not good at is towing long distances.
Exactly.
Everything else, it's arguably arguably the best F-150.
I agree.
For everything except long distance towing.
I agree.
And it's a shame that they're not going to have the BEV version around. I would love to see them keep that and offer the EREV as well. But you know, given the market realities, the EREV is probably the right choice for them to be making for this larger truck.
I think so. And then as the technology matures, right, the batteries may get cheaper and cheaper.
Yeah, as you start to get the LMR batteries that they've talked about, or you know, structural battery
different chemistries, right?
Get solid state, get higher energy density, and bring the cost of those batteries down, then maybe come back and revisit the electric truck.
Have you heard any rumblings of, remember the Model T moment?
Yes.
Where they talked about the mid-size-ish, smallish electric truck.
It's going to be a Maverick-sized truck.
Something like this. Yeah. Have you heard anything else? Are we going to see a concept or something else?
Yeah, we will start to see some stuff from Ford over the next several months.
Okay.
So
that would be exciting.
It's scheduled to go into production around the end of the year.
This in 26?
The end of 2026. Oh. You know, go on sale in 27, probably first half of 27.
Okay.
But production towards the end of the year. And they will start showing us more details on that truck this year. I did get one interesting detail last week. I was at a dinner while I was at CES. I was at a dinner with some Ford executives. And, you know, if you follow the EV space, you know, one of the things that a lot of manufacturers have had issues with is 12-volt batteries dying.
Yeah.
And when you guys bought a Cybertruck last year, that one had no 12-volt battery in it.
No, it wasn't.
48-volt.
Yeah.
That's what's going to be in the universal electric vehicle platform as well, the Ford.
Very interesting.
So,
are you for that? Are you pretty excited by that?
Yeah, we've had 48 volt technology around for things like mild hybrids, like that e-torque system on the Ram, for quite some time.
Yeah.
But the problem is there's still a lot of other systems in the vehicles that are designed to run at 12 volts.
All the lights, all the switches.
Yeah, all the ventilation fans,
computers,
everything. Yeah, it's designed to run at 12 volts, and so that's why you had this mix of 12 and 48 volt architectures on vehicles. Well, what's happened in the last few years is a lot of the suppliers that build those components have started to actually redesign those things to run at 48 volts.
So you think it was a little bit. Catalyst was a Cybertruck, maybe?
That was probably one of the catalysts, yeah.
Okay.
I think, you know, there's interest from the industry broadly to go to 48 volts because 48 higher voltage, you can make the wires thinner, you can reduce the amount of copper, you can reduce some of the costs, simplify things. And so you're going to see more 48 volt systems in the coming years.
It's exciting.
That Ford electric truck is going to be one of the first from a legacy automaker.
From Ford, yeah. I'm actually really happy to hear that because I've studied the Cybertruck system. You know, I was looking and listening and studying that system and just the amount of power and also, like you said, weight reduction, cost reduction potentials, and also the heat pump.
Yeah.
Right, how it integrates with those climate control systems.
Yeah, so, and, you know, when they did the Lightning, you know, they used a lot of off-the-shelf stuff from standard F-150, you know, a lot of the ventilation, heating and ventilation elements, and that added to the costs. And so with this new vehicle, it's being designed really from the ground up as an EV and really being optimized for that. And I think that's going to, you know, that's and that smaller truck, I think, will be a much better application for most people that are interested in going electric and want a pickup truck rather than the full size.
All right, so now we've traveled. And we're standing in the GMC booth, so this is a General Motors area. There's also Chevrolet. So let's do a quick rundown. So in the GMC space, we have the heavy-duty truck, light-duty, and also you could see prominently a couple of electric Sierras, right?
Yep. And don't forget the Corvette ZR1X.
Yes. Maybe we can get a glance at that. But I think that's interesting that GM is actually expanding their lineup of electric trucks because we have an AT4, kind of an off-road model. We have a little bit more basic LT model as well.
Yeah, they've kind of shifted, like with the Silverado and Sierra EVs, they've kind of shifted the model lineups a little bit because when they launched Silverado EV, You had the work truck, and you had this high-end RST model. And they've gotten rid of that.
Yeah.
And they're letting GMC handle that
luxury truck
with the Denali.
Yeah.
And so they've got, now you've got the work truck and what, the LT, I think, or LTZ, and then the Trail Boss.
Trail Boss, yeah.
And then, you know, GMC, they've also got an AT4 and the Denali.
Well, you can see it here. They also have
the elevation.
That's GMC language for kind of a base.
Yeah, so now you got a little bit less overlap. They're filling in the gaps in there.
And the pricing coming down, right? Mm-hmm. So with smaller batteries, a little bit simpler equipment, right? You're starting with about $65,000. Maybe with destination it's going to be more, because destinations, like we said, are growing and growing.
Well, one important thing to keep in mind with General Motors is that in the prices that they advertise, they include the destination charge. So that's out the door.
Thank you, General Motors. Because I've noticed Toyota doesn't do that. Some others don't do that.
Almost no one does.
Ford doesn't do that. No. Nobody else does it.
Yeah.
That's really cool that these prices are actually true.
Yeah.
Yes. So that's great. There's 84X AEV edition that you mentioned.
Yeah.
But it's very tall.
Tall, but if you want an off-roader, an off-road version, an off-road GM midsize truck, this is the top of the line.
So I was talking to Case, my colleague, about this, and we really call this guy the rock crawler.
Yeah.
I know these trucks, any truck
this
will do
everything.
This is
as close as you get to a Wrangler from General Motors.
Exactly. Because it's sitting higher, it's using 35-inch tall tires from the factory, it's got the suspension and the locking differentials to back it up.
And because of the 35s, that means they can't mount the spare tire underneath the bed. So you have to use up a big chunk of your bed.
Yeah.
And that tire is heavy.
Yes.
Because when I had this thing, I had to haul some brush to the township compost site.
Okay.
And so I took that thing out of there and trying to lift that thing back in to put it back.
About 60, 70 pounds maybe?
At least that.
And also visibility.
Yes, a little bit. You basically have no visibility on
because the rear view mirror is coming through.
And they don't have the digital camera mirror on the Canyon, so you basically don't see anything out the back. Because between the spare tire and then the headrest on the other side there, it basically blocks off the entire rear view.
So you kind of have to use your side mirrors, kind of like a commercial
truck,
I guess.
Drive like a typical Michigan driver that doesn't use their mirrors anyway.
Okay, we won't talk about that.
Hey, I live here, so I can say
well,
that.
Yeah. Let's swing around the Corvette CX, because that's a gorgeous thing. We could check into Chevy, what Chevy's up to. But like you said, so Detroit Auto Show, it's in January, right? Mm-hmm. It switched to the summer for a couple of years, right?
Yeah.
But truly is like the first show of the season, right, of the year.
Yeah.
And it used to have all the manufacturers here, right?
Yeah, it used to be everybody from around the world was here.
Yeah.
When Chinese automakers first started coming to North America, this is where they displayed in like 2007, 2008.
And now it's just really focused on Detroit, really, Michigan.
While we're here, that Corvette ZR1X, they just released a video yesterday.
I saw that.
Quarter mile. 8.67 seconds.
Yes.
At 159 miles an hour.
And a 0 to 60 of 1.6 something.
Yeah, 1.6 and change, yeah.
It's all-wheel drive, right? So that's helping.
Yeah.
That's
helping. So they combined the twin-turbo LT5 with the hybrid system from the E-Ray on the front axle.
Yeah.
So 1,250 horsepower.
And really, that's 1.6 something time is... Yeah. Faster than any Tesla Plaid.
Yeah.
Technically speaking.
Yeah.
So combustion.
Theoretically, if they ever build the next Tesla Roadster, it's supposed to be faster than that.
Sure. But, using rocket boosters, right?
Yeah, but you know, who knows if they'll ever actually build that.
Well, they announced that Tesla Roadster, seven years ago?
2017.
Okay. Almost 9 years ago?
Yeah.
Okay. So I actually used to own a Colorado Trail Boss.
Yeah, I remember.
Mine was an interesting color.
I actually like that color.
Oh, I appreciate it, because a lot of people make fun of me for that color. But
I mean, I'm a fan of bold colors. You know, I think there's way too many silver and black and white and monochrome shades.
You know, Ford Booth had some color.
Yeah, they did.
With those Mavericks. Yeah. But this is an interesting addition. This is celebrating America, USA.
Yeah.
With 1776, kind of a 250th anniversary of the country. So it's got a couple of, you know, the sports bar brackets.
Yeah.
It's not. So not supposed to be
more for mounting your lights on it. Yeah,
it's
like that,
it's not supposed to be a roll bar. So yeah. Please don't roll your vehicles. Okay.
I mean, you don't want to roll your vehicle anyway, regardless.
Yes. So, and then over there, there's some color over there. There's a Trail Boss.
Yep. Silverado EV.
Silverado
Trail
ED. But once again, there's no Duramax news.
Nope.
Right.
No news at all from GM here this week.
But I think they're also showing, and I'll do a separate video about this. They're showing their 2027 Bolt. So the Bolt is coming back.
Yeah.
So
there's one right there. Nice bright orange.
Oh, hey, there's some color.
Yeah.
There's some
color.
Got
a bunch of color here. It's great.
All right. So now we got to transition.
And we have to go to Toyota?
Toyota, yes. Yeah. We have to go to Toyota because we'll mention, you know, all of the big three, but Toyota is a humongous menu. Are they make most in the world?
They are the largest automaker in the world. Yes. Yeah. They sell about 10 million vehicles a year globally.
Maybe, so that's not necessarily true. They're not the biggest in the U.S. by vehicle count.
No. I think they're second.
They're
up
there.
GM. Yeah.
They're up there. Also not tremendous news, right?
Yeah. No news that I'm aware of from Toyota, but they have their Tundras and their Tacomas here.
I want to mention some news as far as sales numbers are concerned. Mm-hmm. You know I love numbers, right? So as we're looking at some of the trucks here, their Tacoma, where is the Tacoma? Their Tacoma
right
was,
there.
The sales were going through the roof.
Yeah.
Did you notice that?
Yeah, I saw that. What was it? Was it 278,000
last
year? Yeah.
I think that was the best year ever for Tacoma in the U.S.
Yeah. I mean, it's been the best-selling midsize pickup in North America for a long time. And, you know, for a lot of good reasons. You know, it's generally been very reliable. There's some things that some of the competitors do better, certainly in terms of cabin space.
Maybe payload and towing. Some of the domestics have higher numbers.
Yeah, but overall, you know, they cover a lot of ground with this truck, and it's also one of the few, the only ones that's still available with a choice of crew cab or just a regular extended cab. And I think you can still get the SR5 single cab, right?
Yeah, but it has, no. It doesn't have the rear doors, but it's still an extended cab.
Okay.
Yes.
But still, it's an option you can't get from the Detroit automakers anymore.
No.
They only do crew cabs
in the mid-sizers.
Yeah.
And also, the only new truck available with a manual.
Yes. Yeah. That's,
yes.
Because they dropped the Frontier manual, right?
Frontier manual is dropped.
Yeah.
When they upgraded to the engine, the 3.8, and the Gladiator manual transmission is also discontinued.
Okay.
So, if you wanted to row your own gears, the Tacoma for 2026
is
the only game in town. And I wanted to ask you about this because Tacoma has been around. Well, they used to be called the pickup, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the Tacoma name continuously has been around. Ford kind of walked away from the Ranger market for many years. What was your perspective on that?
I think Ford had some interesting rationale for discontinuing the Ranger in North America in like 2010 and 2011 when they did.
Yes.
Which was that, you know, the cost differential to build a Ranger versus an F-150 was pretty small. And the Ranger wasn't really getting better fuel economy than an F-150 at the time. For a lot of customers, it didn't necessarily make sense to buy a Ranger over an F-150. But as the price of F-150s kept climbing through the 2010s, then they had to rethink that and said, okay, we need a more affordable offering. And so they brought back the Ranger to North America. Plus, you know, there was obviously some demand. Toyota was still selling a ton of these. Nissan was selling a ton of Frontiers. GM had brought back the Canyon in Colorado and were doing well. So Ford brought back the Ranger, you know, to give a price point below where F-150 was. As F-150, you know, climbed into the 50,000s and up price range, then Ranger fit into that mid-30s to $50,000 range. And then they brought in the Maverick at the bottom end of the range.
Yeah, but isn't it true, because I was always an enthusiast, but I entered the industry in about 2011. the Ranger was one the best seller, what, in the 90s and the early 2000s. I mean, it sold outsold Tacomas, right?
Yeah.
And that was kind of a bummer in my mind for
Ford.
Yeah,
well, Ford didn't update it for a long time, and then they decided.
It kind of got stale.
It got stale, and then as the market shifted from the more compact to the midsize trucks, they didn't really update the Ranger to fit that market. And so eventually they just discontinued it entirely. And then, they discontinued it in North America. They kept it globally. The rest of the world got a new generation midsize Ranger, which eventually we got here as well.
I know. Yeah. But I want to mention, you mentioned, the overall size of the vehicle. I'm not sure how big your garage here is in Michigan. My Colorado garage at my house is about 19 feet long. So an F-150 usually doesn't fit lengthwise.
Yeah.
And sometimes height.
That's another consideration for
height
customers.
Height is a challenge too.
Yeah, if they want to park their trucks inside the garage, buying a full size, in most places you can't do that.
And the heavy duty, forget about it. That Silverado over there is towering over most things.
Yeah, well my garage, I can fit a midsize truck in there, but my garage door is only 7 feet high.
Yeah.
And so I cannot put one of those in there. Even if it was long enough, it's too tall to fit.
So this Tacoma has a rack here. By the way, it says Toyota on it, so they're kind of expanding their accessories.
Mm-hmm.
This is not quite 7 feet, but this is getting close to what some of the heights requirements are. Or maybe even garages, right? Parking garages around the city.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think that's why I was looking at the sales data for midsizers. They're growing, the entire market. I think they grew 20% year over year for all of the midsizers combined.
Yeah, and like I said, as the full-size trucks get more and more expensive, consumers are looking at what can they afford and what, can these trucks actually deliver what they need, what they want in a truck? And for what most people are using a truck for, going out and going to their big box store and buying 15 or 20 bags of mulch, you can put those in the back of a Tacoma or other midsize
or a
truck.
Maverick.
Yeah,
or a Maverick,
for
that matter.
Maverick or even a Hyundai Santa Cruz.
Are you surprised?
I've had 15 bags of mulch in the back of a Santa Cruz.
Yes. Are you surprised that like Toyota and many other manufacturers are not competing with the Maverick?
I am. I'm surprised that there hasn't been more movement in that smaller compact space. Toyota is working on the Stout, although from what I'm hearing, that program got pushed back a couple of years. So it may be closer to 2030 before we see it. I do expect to see at some point over the next several years, at least one or two more compact trucks.
Well, there's
trucks.
A lot of expertise in this area because every manufacturer has, there's a Corolla Cross, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they all have small vehicle chassis.
Yeah, the Maverick and the Santa Cruz are both based on compact crossover platforms.
Yes.
And so you got Corolla Cross, you got RAV4.
Yeah.
Either of those could potentially be, a Maverick
a candidate for that
type of vehicle.
And then you have Honda with a lot of strength in that area, too, and many others, right?
Yeah.
So
Honda could do something below the Ridgeline.
Yeah.
Based on the CRV or HRV.
I'm actually really hoping, and I think, I don't know if you, I was listening to your podcast, Wheel Bearings podcast. I'm really hoping that, because the Pilot has been refreshed, I'm really hoping they do that refresh to the Ridgeline. And also there's the EREV plug-in hybrid tech, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not EREV, but plug-in hybrid tech coming to Hondas, right?
Yes. So I was in Japan in October, late October, for the Japan Mobility Show with Honda, and they took us to the Tochigi Proving Grounds, and they showed us their next generation hybrid and their larger vehicle platforms. There will be a next generation of the Pilot and the Ridgeline and the Odyssey coming off of this platform, and actually probably the new RDX that. Honda just announced, next generation RDX that's coming in the next couple of years. And so that will probably be on that same architecture. I definitely expect an all new Ridgeline based off that platform and perhaps even something smaller.
Yeah, that would be really exciting because a lot of people forget that the Ridgeline is there, mm-hmm. but it's continued since 06, right? I mean, it's almost 20 years.
It's been around a long time.
It's almost 20 years of Ridgeline. And I think
it doesn't sell in the kind of numbers of the domestic trucks.
Yeah.
But then again, because it's based on that same architecture with the Odyssey and the Pilot, you know, and they're built on the same assembly lines, it's, you know, the incremental cost for Honda is not enormous. So it makes sense for them to continue building it if they're selling 35, 40,000 a year, which is what they've been doing.
Yeah. We keep an eye on a local used car auction, and Roman recently found and grabbed and bought a 2008 Ridgeline.
With what, about 200,000 miles on it?
Almost, 195,000-ish. Yeah. And I just drove it. We have a video about it. Mm-hmm. And it's really solid. After 195
miles. You want
one of these? That's not a truck.
No.
That's a Cadillac Formula
One. But it'll haul.
It will haul something.
Yes.
Not mulch.
Yeah. No.
One haul mulch. But this will.
Yeah.
A Hummer EV will haul some mulch.
It will. It will. Absolutely will. Somebody in my neighborhood last fall, or last summer actually, they had a Tesla Model Y, and they got rid of it and got one of these instead.
And this is what we're looking at here, is a Hummer EV pickup truck. 3X is a three motor system, mm-hmm. which is their most powerful. And this is a carbon edition, because you need to lightweight a Hummer, right?
I mean, when I first had one, I took it to the weigh scales. It was 9,200 pounds.
Yeah.
And I think you guys, because you put the larger tires on there.
Yours, we put 37s, like 9,300 pounds, maybe a little bit more.
Yeah.
So I'm making a little bit of a joke of this, but there is carbon fiber, actual genuine pieces on this.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, that's what you need in a 9,000 pound off-road truck, right?
But also the wheels. So I was talking to some engineers. You could take maybe a close at the wheels. The wheels is actually kind of makes sense, because you're removing unsprung mass. Mm-hmm. And also they were telling me a side effect that they found was the carbon wheel makes a little bit less noise as it goes over large events like potholes or something like that. So, which is important in an electric vehicle, because you don't want to hear the noises coming from other components.
On the other hand, you know, if you're going off-road and you hit some rocks with those wheels...
And scratch it?
Yeah, that's going to get very expensive.
I don't even know how much one of these would be cost, but I don't want to find out.
Many thousands of dollars. Those are probably about $6,000 or $7,000 each.
That's what you think?
Yeah.
Well, if you can afford a $120,000 truck, maybe you could tolerate replacing a wheel. I mean...
Hopefully.
I don't.
I hope so.
But it's not for you and I.
No. It's a little out of my price range.
All right. So there's
also... You guys don't pay me enough to help with these videos, so...
I don't think we're paying you anything.
My point exactly.
So as we wrap up, there's a lot of indoor driving here.
Yeah.
There's actually combustion engines running around here, too.
Yes.
So not just electric.
So don't breathe too hard.
So you could check out, I mean, there is good ventilation.
It's a big facility.
Yeah, I'm not worried about that, but we have different brand new vehicles that you can take rides in. And also there is an overland area. Did you check out the overland area?
I did not.
You see that? It's in the corner.
Oh, okay.
As we're kind of heading back, so Ford also had some news with RTR.
Yes.
RTR, and I want to ask you about this, if that's also not a trend. So we talked about kind of lowered vehicles, lowered pickup trucks becoming a little bit of a trend. Also a trend of taking an aftermarket company like RTR, mm-hmm. That you see here with the Mustangs and the Broncos, and actually folding it into the factory.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
So yeah, I mean, this is actually a trend that goes back to at least the 1960s. When Ford first teamed up with Carroll Shelby in the 1960s on the Mustang, the first few years, the original GT350s were built at Shelby American facility in California. They would ship cars from the Ford assembly plant to Shelby, pre-title. They would do the modifications, turn them into a GT350 and later GT500, and then send them to the dealers. And then eventually, Ford started building those in their own, right on their own assembly lines. Based on the designs and everything from Shelby. That's pretty much what's happening right now with RTR. They started off having RTR taking pre-title cars, Mustangs and Broncos from Ford. And of course, you know, Celine has done that for decades and others.
There's Roush. Yeah. I mean, there's a number of companies.
And so, but the cost of doing that is much higher than building it in a factory. So, RTR is still offering their spec series Broncos and Mustangs. So if you want something really specific, you can go to RTR and they will order the vehicle from the factory. They will modify it, upfit it with their stuff, and then send it to your dealer for you to purchase. But now for the Bronco for 2027, they're doing the RTR versions right in the Michigan assembly plant, not far from here, about 10 miles from here.
Speaking of which, this is a great segue. I haven't planned that segue. Okay.
Those are the best kind of segues.
But the
ones segue, that you just kind of fall into.
The segue is that AEV, American Expedition Vehicle, is a separate
first
company.
Fords.
And they're doing a Ford. But this Bison, what underpins this heavy-duty Silverado and this Colorado, that's done at the GM factory.
Oh, they're doing it in the factory, on the assembly lines now, AEV.
So the bumpers, the skid plates,
some
of the other components, get shipped from to the GM factory, and they get put on actually at the factory for the GM trucks.
Okay.
That's not happening with Ram or Ford.
Okay.
But now they also have the Ford FXL package on only 40s.
Yeah, of course. Would it be worth it to do it with anything less?
No. No. But actually, it looks proportional, actually.
Yeah, well, I'm going to have to show this to my neighbor, because my neighbor's been building his own overlanding rig. He bought, a couple of years ago, he bought an F-550 chassis cab, and he got a Bowen bed put on it, and he's got a camper.
There's a camper here as well. Yeah.
And he installed a liquid spring suspension in it, and he put some 35s on it. It's a dually.
Oh, cute.
Yeah.
Very cute.
Yeah, they look so cute. But he you know, he was concerned about going bigger than that, just because of the clearance. Because then he would have to start cutting up the front fenders.
Yeah.
But clearly, it's possible to put 40s on that truck. So I'll show it to Mark, and you know, he may want to do that.
Well, there's a Dave Harrington, CEO of American Expedition Vehicles, is right there. I actually had an interview with him.
Yeah.
So we have a separate video on alltfl.com, and he walked me through every inch of this Ford.
Did they have to cut up the fenders to fit?
Not a lot.
Oh, okay.
According to him, they did build special, very, very strong fender flares.
Okay.
You could knock it, actually. It's actually built like a tube.
Oh, okay.
Like a shaped tube, so it has some strength in it.
Oh, very
nice. But this truck does sit, it has a 4-inch suspension lift, and the tire, because it's such a big tire, adds another about 3 inches.
Okay.
So we're talking about 7 inches of additional height. And I'm not a small dude.
Yeah.
And I'm standing next to this truck. So, but he said not a lot of cutting was involved.
Okay.
So it's almost like Ford had actually enough space in there.
Yeah, well, I think one of the things that also kept my neighbor using 35s instead of going larger than that was the height when he puts the camper on. Because with the camper, it's almost 13 feet tall. And so when he first went to get it, he was concerned about it too. Yeah, because he was concerned about going under some of the overpasses.
Yeah, but not just overpasses, but also to get in and out of it.
Yeah.
Because the camper, if it's sitting, I don't know, 5 feet off the ground, you have to have like a staircase.
Yeah,
just
like this one right here.
Yeah, you have to. So this is a truck house. That's the name of the body builder for the camper. And you can see there's a 4-step staircase, and there's a little bit of space even below it.
Yeah, Mark's I think has 2 or 3 steps to get up into it.
So yes, so that's, and now kind of AEV, they're having a lot better integration.
They're partnering with truck house?
Basically, basically they're partnering together. So the integration is a lot more close.
Okay.
So you can actually buy this camper.
So maybe AEV tunes the suspension and everything
the chassis.
To accommodate the weight of the camper.
And the capability. And you can see even the protection underneath.
Yep.
So it's all tied in together. So that's quite interesting. Well, I think we walked most of it.
Yeah, I mean, there's more than I actually thought when I first walked in here this morning.
Yeah,
because I hadn't even noticed all this back here.
Oh, and also, don't tell anybody, there's also U.S. Army in the corner here, and they have a couple of light vehicles that you can check out too. And I heard a rumor, I don't know if you heard about this tomorrow, that there's a new concept Abrams tank. Have you heard of this?
I've heard that they were going to be showing something, yeah.
So I heard a rumor that there might be a tank coming out at the show as well. Not on this floor, because I think...
I don't know if this floor can support a 60-ton tank.
I think this floor would crumble.
Yeah.
But what doesn't crumble is when you have a light tactical vehicle like this.
Yeah.
Which is actually a Colorado.
Yeah.
It's a Chevy Colorado.
Yeah, it's built by GM Defense.
Yeah. So if you want to see some of these vehicles, just here's a little glimpse. Look how simple it is.
Yeah. I mean, that's all you need for this use case, yeah.
And what I noticed, Sam,
is that... Are the seats heated and the steering wheel and everything?
No, but where are the gauges?
Good question.
I don't think you need to know.
Yeah.
If you need to know...
If you're driving over desert terrain, it's probably not that important.
No. It's all about... I'm not a member of the military, but I think it's just as slow as necessary or as fast as necessary, right?
Depends what you're running from or running to.
Exactly. So we could interview some of the specialists here, but I'm guessing you don't need to know a lot.
More seats in the back, too. So we got, eight seats altogether? Yeah.
Actually, plus four.
Nine. Yeah.
This is like a minivan.
Yeah.
Better than a minivan.
Yeah. Minivans only hold seven.
All right, Sam, I really appreciate it.
Always good to spend time with you, Andre.
I'll buy you lunch, okay?
Okay, thanks.
I appreciate it. Thank you for joining us. We'll see you next time.